This is Scott Becker. Today I'm joined by one of the great chief executive officers in the healthcare world, Randy Oostra. Randy's the long-term CEO of ProMedica, and aside from being a brilliant strategist, he's a wonderful person and speaker and leader of people. So, Randy, we're going to talk a lot about today about both your career, but then also about healthcare trends in general and system issues. Can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. And thanks, Scott. Yeah, you know, Randy Oostra, I'm the president and CEO of ProMedica Health. And we today call ourselves an integrated health and well-being organization. We were a traditional regional integrated delivery system, and just over a year ago, acquired a very large post-acute organization, one of the largest, if not the largest in the country, called HCR ManorCare. So today we are in 28 states and around $7 billion in revenue and roughly 55,000, 60,000 employees. And then, you know, just kind of have a variety of services across the United States.
And talk to us a little bit about how you got there. You started with the system. When did you start with the system? You're $7 billion today in revenues. You're a great care providing organization, always winning awards for the care you provide, patient experience, and how you deal with patients, a great mix of a large system and a community health system. Talk about how you got there. What size were you when you joined ProMedica? When did you join ProMedica? And so forth.
Yes. So it started about 20 years ago. We were roughly $1 billion. And, you know, through different phases, have gone through different, you know, spurts of growth. And so over the last 10 years, we went from about a $2 billion to a $7 billion organization. So we've had been blessed with a lot of opportunities. And then again, as I kind of talked about in the intro, moved away from more of the traditional provider group and really have a lot of other, you know, opportunities that we're trying to, you know, offer a much more integrated and kind of holistic path. So, yeah, it's been a nice journey, and it's been fueled by a lot of, you know, things of how we view the world and how we think healthcare is changing.
And let me ask you this: whenever I'm around you, I am surrounded by other leaders at ProMedica who seem to be just thrilled with their experience at ProMedica. How important is that, building that next leadership team, building a deeper leadership team? How important has that been to the ability to go from $1 billion system to $7 billion system and to scale how you scaled?
You know, I think as anyone would say, it's, you know, it's the reason for our success. You know, I look at, you know, just the various groups, you know, whether it's our insurance group or, you know, our senior services group or our provider group. You know, every year we look back and we say, are we better than last year? And especially from a people standpoint. And I would say in the last 10 years, every year I would say yes. And we just are blessed with talented people. You know, one of the things we've tried to do, and we're not perfect at it, is, you know, make sure people understand kind of what our vision is and more importantly, what our purpose is. And really connect people to our mission, and, you know, and I think increasingly we know that's important as people look for purpose in life. And we spend a lot of time, you know, and I think we've created a culture where we're allowing people to pursue their passions and pursue their careers. So, yeah, we're very fortunate. We've got a lot of young talent that we're excited and would say that we have more opportunities today than we've ever had in our history of our organization. And they are the folks that are going to, you know, take advantage of those opportunities.
I want to talk to you for a minute or two about your own career. Then I want to talk to you about system strategy. In terms of your own career, anything you could tell us about things you're most proud of regarding ProMedica, and also any career setbacks that you'd like to discuss?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, a couple things with ProMedica. I think there would be probably two things that you know, would kind of point to today. And the first one, of course, is this HCR ManorCare discussion. You know, those things just don't happen overnight. It was an organization that was equal in size, if not larger, in its heyday. They were well over $4 billion. And we actually went through a process, approached them, you know, before, probably a year or two before they joined us, about joining us. And it was, you know, kind of an interesting change, just converting a you know, for-profit national organization into a nonprofit, and then beginning to think about how we might do that. And actually, we had 30 different meetings we counted with finance committees and executive committees and board committees about trying to get them ready for that. And really what it's done is, you know, when you begin to look at their portfolio, we've reduced their skilled nursing facilities, but, you know, we're in, you know, 28 states. We have assisted living, home health care and hospice, some outpatient therapy, and really in some very high growth areas. And also they're profitable in those areas, which helps us when we think about kind of the blend of services that we really want to offer. And then the other work I would cite is just the last decade of work with social determinants of health. We began to address those over a decade ago. We did it because we saw the needs in neighborhoods and with patients. And 10 years later, you know, we've screened millions of people. We screen every patient for the social determinants of health. And now we're screening employees, our own employees and other companies for the 10 social determinants of health, as well as life purpose. And that's led to some anchor institution investments in community. So those would be the things I would point to. Probably the biggest setback that always sticks out in my career is probably somewhere around 12, 13 years ago, ProMedica got into a huge fight with a large group of specialists. And it was, you know, it was a bit of a train wreck for them and for us. You know, it was fueled, I think, by ego and power and lack of communication. And then the end result was a great lesson in life. Nobody won. They were hurt by it. We were hurt by it. I think it was a great lesson for all of us about, you know, even though we may not always agree, but to try to find common ground, work together. And I think had a huge impact on a lot of us, had a huge impact on a lot of them. Most of those doctors, if not all, are employed physicians of ours today. So we've come full cycle, but again, it's one of those life lessons.
Well, that's fantastic. And both your work in this integration of HCR and then also your work on social determinants of health, where you got way out in front of where the rest of the community has been on it, you cite as two of the things you're most excited about, most proud of. And then the different fights, the fight 12, 13 years ago with your specialists and how that sort of ultimately revolved back and came back to be okay at some point, but as sort of a fascinating career situation. Where did you grow up, Randy?
I grew up in a really small town in Northwest Iowa, a town of about 3,000 people. My mom was an immigrant from Holland with her parents. And my dad was first generation, oldest children. So they were both required to work and neither one had the opportunity to go to school. So, you know, they you know, kind of your immigrant family life. Grew up very poor. I didn't realize it ever. I look back now when we were very poor. But the one thing they always pushed their children to do is go to school. And because they didn't get the value of education, that's what they preached to us every day.
Do you ever think growing up in Northwest Iowa, the children of immigrants, that do you ever sort of look back and say, how do they get from there to running a $7 billion organization? Or do you not think like that because so many of our leaders came from those humble backgrounds and had that drive and thirst for education and so forth? How do you look at that given where you came from to where you are today?
Well, I think, you know, I grew up in a very religious, you know, household. So by the grace of God, somehow, you know, got to this position in life. I don't quite understand it, to be blunt. You know, doors open, doors closed along the way. You know, you find yourself in a position that you really look back and say, how did I get here? Some of the paths I would have taken got closed. And so here you end up with a job where you can impact others. And it's humbling. I mean, I know there are people more talented and higher intelligent that would do a great job given opportunities. And, you know, I had an early mentor who said, you know, you're getting an opportunity and you can't feel bad that you've gotten the opportunity. You just should say thank you and make the most of it. And I've always thought that way. I think of our parents and their struggles. And it's like every day I'm incredibly thankful for the opportunity. And then also just what comes with opportunity is responsibility, and to make sure that when we take these jobs, we do the right things with it. And again, we're not perfect, but I think of a lot of our work in social determinants and some of our work in community are really fueled by that. It's just that upbringing and the fact that we all really need to do what we can with, you know, these God-given opportunities.
In any sort of thoughts on people developing a professional career, let's say you're talking to somebody in their 20s or 30s, and they're really trying to get going in the professional career, trying to make a difference, trying to thrive, trying to do well. Any piece of advice that you give younger people trying to develop their career?
You know, I think, yes. Yeah, so, you know, there's a couple things there. You know, a lot of times people ask, you know, how did you get that job? And, you know, usually my response is a lot of hard work for, you know, 30 plus years, went to a lot of school, and the grace of God. And most people would say, well, that's not the answer I'd hope for. You know, they want a quicker job, a quicker answer. And I think it's just that. I think education has been critical, you know, to my career. So I think we constantly learn. I think if you take the mantra that you're always an incomplete leader, that you get up every day and try to do better, I think, you know, I think that's always has to run through your mind. And then I, you know, clearly it's still, you know, emotional intelligence. It's trying to, you know, understand people and connect with people and do right with people. And those skills go a long way. And, you know, if you can figure out a career in life that has a purpose and you're connected and motivated by that, and then how careers evolve, we don't always know. But, with those sort of things, which our parents taught us, you know, I think those are the sort of things I would tell the people today, is if you're going to mark your career, mark them by those things.
Thank you. And it's so fascinating you say, because as I talk to some younger people, including children, as they sort of want everything to be linear. If I go here and do this, this will happen. But it really doesn't work that way, does it? I mean, you mentioned different doors open, different doors close. You have to be open to them. You have to work hard when you get in them. You have to have a thirst for education. Some of your thoughts on these careers not being as linear as maybe people would like them to be.
Yeah, you know, I think that's true. I think we see a lot of, you know, folks saying like, well, give me the three steps. And it isn't always that easy. I do think, though, having some sort of, you know, a mentorship around career choices and picking, you know, when you pick a career and you pick a path, there are usually some limitations on that path, whether it be, you know, what you can do, the impact you're going to have, things like compensation. And I think, you know, understanding where you want to be in life and planning that out is clear. But, you know, I think I think as long as you're open to opportunities, some of our executives today that work at ProMedica, they have worked throughout our system. So they've worked on the hospital side, and they may have worked on the post-acute side and the continuum side. And then one day you wake up with a breadth and depth of experience. And so I think as long as people look at these experiences, and the more that you're able to develop yourselves, the better positioned you are. You know, many times we see the 30-year-old saying, I'm ready for your job. And it's like, well, no, you're not, because you really just haven't had these life experiences that you really need to have. And each time you get a different assignment and a different responsibility, you're going to be better because of those experiences. So I think there's a balance there. I think it's not linear. Life is gray. There aren't always answers for everything. And then you need to come back to some principles in life of how you're going to manage, how you're going to treat people, what your work ethic is, being open to learning and to listening to others. You come back to some of these basics. And I think if you stick with those sort of life principles, your career is going to be successful.
Thank you. And then another question. Yeah, Randy, any advice for health system leaders on strategy? How do you think about strategy? How do you go about looking at strategy?
You know, I've spent most of my career doing strategy, and it's always thinking in terms of, you know, what's next for the organization and how do we position ourselves, you know, for the future. And, you know, most strategic plans aren't really strategic at all. But I think it's critical these days for people to kind of adopt a point of view of where they think healthcare is going and what investments they're going to make sure that their organization is positioned. And so when you begin to think about what we're going to look like 5 years from now, what might be different, both globally, regionally, statewide, community-wise. And then again, I think as you think about each area of your organization, how does each area get better? So, you know, we, and for a variety of reasons, when we started looking at a lot of the environmental factors around healthcare, we identified the post-acute senior services area as an area of tremendous growth when others would say, I don't want anything to do with that. And, you know, right or wrong, whatever point of view, I think people need to, you know, adopt a point of view and then begin to think in terms of what they're going to do differently. We see a lot of systems, and some have told us this, they're kind of sitting on their balance sheet. They really don't know what to do. And I think that's not a good answer. And I think people need to begin to think clearly about where are we going to, you know, head? What are we going to be known for? What resources do we need to put in things we're not doing today? And really begin to think how you're going to position yourselves, where you want to be 5 to 10 years from now, and what steps are you taking to get there?
Well, it's a fascinating perspective, and you said it well. I mean, many people view the bet on seniors as, well, we know there's going to be 100 million seniors, 150 million seniors, and there's more people on Medicare and Medicaid every day in post-65 and post-acute. The investment community has been sort of negative on it. And you took the contrarian path of this is where the world has to be and where it's going. And we took clarity on it, you know, and doing well with it. And it's a fascinating perspective. It's also a fascinating perspective that, look, it's the old adage, you're better off having a plan than no plan. Because if you have a plan, if you don't hit it perfectly, as long as you hedge your bets some and don't over leverage the organization, things generally turn out far better than they otherwise would if you have some plan versus not having one. And it's a fascinating perspective. Did I capture that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what happens is, you know, I've recently had a CEO mention that this person was going to run the organization as long as they could and then throw the keys to someone else, like another system. And I remember driving home thinking, like, that's not a good plan. You know, and I think, you know, you have to, you know, take some steps these days to position yourself. And we call our, you know, acquisition one bold move in our organization. And not that you have to make bold moves, but I think, you know, this idea of starting to think about where you can position yourselves. I mean, clearly, you know, we look at our percent of revenues on our provider side of, you know, today, you know, we're getting close to 60% being outpatient revenue. And, you know, it starts to make you think differently. And then when you just look at trends, we can't afford this model. There is no doubt about it. Things have to change because of the impacts on people. Whether it gets driven out of healthcare, I doubt it. I think it gets driven out of our business community and probably by the government. But we're going to see some fundamental changes in how we deliver care for a variety of reasons. And I think people need to think about how they want to be positioned, if they want to be positioned to do more of that, or, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, or do they just want to stay on the traditional, more clinical services, what hospitals traditionally have done. But again, position yourselves to, you know, react to the environment to make sure your organization is solid and successful.
Well, you mentioned a couple of fascinating things in there, and we've all seen this where you've got a CEO, often one who's had good success over the course of their career in their system, in their 50s or 60s, let's say, and they've basically made the decision that there are no bold moves left other than at some point, I want to turn the keys over. Well, things are still going well, so I maintain my reputation intact. I maintain the system safe. I might maintain my pension in good shape and those kinds of things, rather than looking at, you know, looking at the organization past their own career into the future and making those bold moves that allow the organization to potentially be a survivor going forward that really thrives and really serves their community versus, quote unquote, turning over the keys. I mean, a fascinating perspective. And I know that you and I, you intimately deal with lots of different CEOs in your position as being CEO of a major system and watching the growth of it, have seen lots of people that fit those different camps, those that want to take those bold moves, continue to serve their communities, build their organization, and those that say almost like Roberto Duran, no mas, I'm ready to be done, and things are pretty good shape. So let me turn the keys over before anything goes wrong.
Yep. Yeah, I had an early boss who told me when I was young in my career that, you know, get yourself in a position where you never need the job, and which I didn't understand until many years later. And it was like, don't get yourself in a position where you can't make a decision or make a recommendation because you're worried about your paycheck. Make the right decisions for the future. I do think, you know, right now, just the way, you know, not that, and this is maybe controversial, I think we've gotten way too conservative in traditional healthcare. We built a very major industry. All the advisors, all the, you know, push and pull is to be ultra conservative. And yet when I look at industry and I look at some of the private equity people, the investments they're making, how aggressive they are, and healthcare is sitting back and watching, in a lot of cases, it's like, because you need to sit on your cash. It concerns me that, you know, again, we have to, you know, make sure that we have the right amount of resources for the future and be good stewards. But I also worry that we've created an industry that we have said you have to sit and be conservative and you're not allowed to do these other things. And when you do, it's somewhat controversial. And then it only falls to a few large organizations that are in unusual situations with unusual resources. So I think there has to be some changes there. And I start to see that changing, and I hope it continues to change where organizations are saying, now I got to position myself for the future. It's just you haven't seen enough of it yet. And it's a concern because ultimately those organizations are going to get in trouble.
100% and a fascinating perspective. Randy, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. I find you, and now I understand it better, being from Northwest Iowa, from humble means, being one of the most centered, intelligent people I get a chance to visit with. So just a great pleasure to visit with you, and a great strategic mind to go with that, who's done an unbelievable job with a great leadership team and a great team of employees building ProMedica to where it is today. So I want to thank you and congratulate you on what you've done, and just continued good luck. And we're looking to see more bold moves over the next 10 years from you.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. You know, our team has just done tremendous work over the last decade. And as I mentioned, we believe we have more opportunities than ever before. So we're excited. The next decade is going to be fantastic.
Well, fantastic. Randy, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a pleasure.
Great. Thanks, Scott.